did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal. Odoo, modern management made simple.
I think it's hard for some people to understand that, you know, you're processing human remains. It can feel like it's very a gross idea, but it's not until you step back and see everything that it really comes together, that this is a person who could have been standing right next to you at some point in their life and in your life.
I'm Al Ledson, and you're listening to Reveal. Today, we're looking at Jane and John Doe's, the thousands of bodies scattered across the country that remain unidentified. It turns out many of them are found in South Texas, where migrants are crossing illegally into the country. A migrant leaves her home in Guatemala, or Honduras, or El Salvador. She heads through Mexico to the U.S. border, where a smuggler helps her cross the Rio Grande into Texas. But her journey isn't over. In fact, the biggest obstacle is just up ahead, a checkpoint about 70 miles inside the U.S. border, run by the Border Patrol. To avoid getting caught, she has to walk 40 miles around it. These are 911 calls. They're from undocumented migrants lost in the dense brush country of Brooks County, Texas. People asking for help, for water. The air is thick and hot here. The soil is sandy and hard to walk through. Migrants can get very desperate very fast. In this call, a woman is traveling with a man who stopped breathing. A lot of these people don't make it, dying of dehydration and heat stroke. Sometimes their bodies aren't even found on the huge ranches out here. And even when they are, the bodies are almost never identified. Hundreds of families in Latin America know someone who crossed the border and then, somewhere in Brooks County, seemed to vanish.
How are you all this morning?
Chief Deputy Benny Martinez works at the Brooks County Sheriff's Department. He looks about how you'd expect a law enforcement guy from South Texas to look. Cowboy hat, Wranglers, boots. He says that 2012 was the worst year for migrant deaths he can remember. His tiny team of four deputies handled all the body recoveries. Sometimes they were going out three times a day to pick up the dead.
We weren't doing anything else but that. I didn't have time to think that it was a crisis.
This is one of them.
The chief heads over to a storage closet in the corner of his office. It's full of these thick binders.
13. Yes, ma'am, I got it. I thank you.
Each one has pages and pages of pictures of the dead.
From each recovery we do, it's just, it's hard, you know. You just can't get used to it. I mean, every single one of these persons had a story.
Chief Martinez and his team picked up 129 bodies in 2012. Brooks County is poor and rural and doesn't have many resources, so everyone was overwhelmed. And even though the chief didn't know it at the time, the system for identifying these migrants was breaking down.
Migrant death has always been a part of border life in Texas. You can go back to drownings in the Rio Grande, which is the actual border barrier itself. People have crossed it for probably hundreds of years.
This is John Carlos Frey. He's a reporter with the New York-based Investigative Fund. He's been covering the deaths in Brooks County for a couple years now. He's tried to figure out the complicated system for identifying these bodies. What happens when a migrant does die out there? I mean, who picks up the body? Who handles burying the body?
It's sort of a 3 or 4 step process, starting with law enforcement, followed by a funeral service company that picks up the body, followed by a justice of the peace that declares time of death and cause of death, and then ending up with some sort of a medical examination to determine whether or not there was foul play.
That's how it's supposed to work. Also, by state law, DNA has to be taken and sent to a national database in North Texas so that there's a chance the body can be identified in the future. After all that, the funeral home would bring the body here, to the Brooks County Cemetery, and bury it in a corner set aside for the unidentified dead.
The little tin markers say unknown remains and a number. Unknown female, 1175285. And there's a lot of faded plastic flowers here. It's really sad when you contrast it to the rest of the graveyard that's cared for and loved. Nobody's been out here to visit these graves in a while.
2 summers ago, word got out that something was wrong at this cemetery. A lot of the migrants hadn't been buried properly. The process we just described hadn't been followed. A researcher at Baylor University heard what was going on.
I got on the phone and called the sheriff and said, hey, you know, I hear you guys have a problem. Would you like our help? And they're like, yes, please.
This is Dr. Lori Baker. She's a forensic anthropologist and a specialist in border cemeteries. She and a team of her students carefully dug up the Brooks County graves, and they were shocked by what they found. Bodies buried in milk crates and garbage bags. Multiple bodies stuffed in the same container, many with no identifying information.
I was angry at the end of last summer. I've never been so angry. I've been frustrated and sad, but this was just appalling. I couldn't believe that anyone would think it's okay to bury someone in a garbage bag.
Over 2 summers, the team dug up more than 120 bodies. What happened in this little cemetery in Texas made international news.
The Sacred Heart Cemetery in Falfurrias is supposed to be a place for dignified burials. But what researchers...
Now, the Texas Rangers could soon conduct a preliminary inquiry into the handling of unidentified bodies that were exhumed by anthropologists.
Eventually, the state noticed what was going on, and the Texas Rangers were assigned to look into whether any laws had been broken. The guy who handled the investigation spent just 2 days on it. Then he issued his report. Here's John Carlos Frey of the Investigative Fund again.
He found no need to go any further. He found no need to initiate a criminal investigation, and the case was closed.
And so it seemed like that was that. The media packed up their cameras and went home. But John kept asking questions, and he found all kinds of problems. For one thing, a lot of the bodies never had DNA collected. Autopsies were handled by a private family doctor who wasn't a licensed pathologist. Some of the remains were actually buried in unmarked graves, another violation. And John had to wonder if bodies were treated this way because they were undocumented migrants.
So if we dump a whole bunch of bodies into a hole in the ground and we just bury it up and forget about it, no one's going to come searching. No one's going to come looking. No one's going to come asking questions.
Now it's up to Dr. Lori Baker and her team to try and identify the bodies with help from researchers at Texas State University. But that process has been made a lot harder because of the illegal way the bodies were handled.
I think it's hard for some people to understand that, you know, you're processing human remains. It can feel like it's very a gross idea. But when you start doing it, you start realizing how powerful this can be to a family member down the road.
One of Dr. Baker's students, Brooke Morris, is scraping tissue from bone and beginning the process of reassembling a skeleton. It's painstaking work.
You know, you're working very intimately with every single bone as you're working through the process. So it's not until you step back and see everything that it really comes together that this is this is a person who could have been standing right next to you at some point in their life and in your life.
We go into the next room, where Dr. Baker shows us some of the clothing found with the remains of another migrant.
Yeah, it looks like a sock, and then a pair of pants with some kind of fancy stuff on the pocket. So, oh, that's interesting. Mickey Mouse. That seems really sad.
I mean, you could definitely sort of get a sense of, like, what her style was and what, like, who she was a little bit.
Absolutely. I look at this and I see all these people walking around Disney with Mickey Mouse shirts on. You just kind of think, oh, that's fun. And then we look over.
Dr. Baker's job is to look for clues, bone structure, dental work, and personal belongings that might help solve the mystery of where that person came from.
All right, we'll go in here and make a round.
Once Dr. Baker has taken DNA from the remains, she sends it here to the headquarters of NAMIS. That's short for the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. You heard about them in our last story.
Okay, we're going to the fingerprint room.
If someone you know disappears, this is where you turn. NAMIS is the country's most comprehensive database of the missing and unidentified. Here's Todd Matthews again. He's a case manager here.
We're going to try to get as much information on that body as we can. We want to know, are there fingerprints? Are there dental records? Can we take an X-ray of the skull?
But for families of migrants, NAMIS is a limited tool. Most are Spanish speakers who live in other countries, and they might be scared about reporting a person who crossed into the country illegally. On top of that, NAMIS policy says that missing person reports have to be submitted through U.S. law enforcement, and they don't often allow for family DNA samples to be collected internationally. That means a mother from, say, the highlands of Guatemala, who may not even have a telephone, would need to reach law enforcement officials here in the U.S. in order to get information into NAMIS. It's a huge hurdle. The database wasn't built with migrants in mind.
It was developed for people here, and it's already a big problem here. Before we take on the world, we got to take care of our own house. Do the migrant people, do they concern us? Absolutely. Absolutely, they concern us. And something has to be done. I just don't know exactly what that is sometimes.
But Dr. Baker says the fix is pretty simple. The National Institute of Justice, the federal agency that funds NAMIS, should make it easier for law enforcement and organizations outside the U.S. to submit information. Dr. Baker says hundreds of identifications could be made.
Families deserve to know what happened, especially in a country where we have the resources, the technology, and the expertise to do it. And if we don't do it, it's just wrong. It's absolutely wrong for us not to do this.
Back in the vast borderlands of Brooks County, 29 bodies have been recovered so far this year. All migrants who lost their way in this tangled landscape.
It's pretty dense.
Just like Dr. Baker, Eddie Canales has put himself on the front lines of this crisis. Eddie's got a giant machete, and he's hacking through thick mesquite brush out here. He's showing us some of the trails that migrants follow as they head north.
Look at these thorns on here. I mean, you get caught in there, you're going through that brush. I mean, you're going to get ripped.
Today, he's leaving out gallon jugs of water along the trail, hoping fewer people will die of dehydration.
My nickname is Water Boy. You know, I like that title.
Other days, he spends on the phone, talking with parents and siblings of people who've gone missing. He tries to figure out where their loved ones last were. Then he passes the details to Chief Deputy Martinez and other law enforcement officials.
You know, I'm interviewing somebody that they have a missing persons. I'm trying to figure out, well, where did you leave that person? Well, I left them in the woods, you know, by, you know, where, you know? Just think of this, trying to describe this.
Yeah, by the yellow flowers.
By the
yellow flowers all over here.
Oh, but there was a fence there. There was a little shack that I saw, you know, lean to.
Eddie works in an area that spans almost 950 square miles, trying to keep hope alive for desperate families spread across half a dozen countries. And for the anonymous migrants who die out here, the efforts of Eddie and Dr. Baker have increased the chances that someday their names will be known. Their bodies aren't buried in the corner of the Brooks County Cemetery anymore. Instead, they're transported to the medical examiner's office in Laredo, where they're properly analyzed and stored. DNA samples are now gathered.
I tell my students, virtually every mother that you talk to says about the same thing, Now I have a place to go and pray. Now I have a place to lay flowers. Now I have the ability to go and be with my son or daughter.
But still, there were more than 120 bodies exhumed from Brooks County. Only three have been identified. That story was produced by Delaney Hall and edited by Taki Telenidis. Thanks to John Carlos Frey and Esther Kaplan at the Investigative Fund for collaborating with us on this investigation. All this month, we're rolling out stories about Jane and John Doe cases across the nation. It's part of a big investigation that's looking at why so many of them go unsolved. Our lead reporter is G.W. Schultz. He's back in the studio with us. G.W., how's it going?
I'm okay, Al. How are you?
Good. So we've been in South Texas where hundreds of migrants have died while trying to enter the U.S., and most of them are still unidentified. Now, as you've reported, this problem isn't limited to the borderlands.
Oh, that's right. Across the country, there are more than 10,000 Jane and John Doe cases recorded in a federal database. That's the conservative number of how many there are.
So who's not doing their job here? Is it the coroners and the medical examiners, the police?
In many communities, we came across detectives, investigators, death investigators who worked these cases as hard as they could. But in other instances, these cases go cold really fast. Medical examiners, coroners have new cases that arrive. Homicide detectives had to have new cases that come up. In some instances we looked at, cases just weren't re-examined very deeply over a period of time. And in particular, after new forensic tools emerged, police weren't going back to see how they could apply those tools to solve cases that at one time were more vexing than they should be now.
You've got a story coming out this week on our website. It's about a Houston woman named Alice Almendarez. Her father, John Almendarez, was missing for 12 years. The family spent years trying to find out what happened to him. And it turns out his body was found not far from his home, but no one connected the dots and identified him. How could that happen?
We met Alice at an event in Houston where families of the long-term missing were encouraged to turn out and provide cheek swabs for DNA samples that maybe connect to a Jane or John Doe around the United States. And she was volunteering that day. It was a Saturday, and we kind of wondered why someone would give up their time on a Saturday to do something like that. So we started to ask her questions about why she was there. And she told us that 12 years prior, her father had disappeared from the Houston area. And during that period, that entire 12-year period, it turned out he was a John Doe. He had been a drowning victim found just up the street from where he had spent his whole life. But she didn't know that. She was unable to connect her missing persons report to his John Doe case, which was literally across town.
So in Alice's case, what went wrong?
Alice says she repeatedly attempted to report her father missing to the authorities in Houston. And in 2010, we at least have documentation going back to 2010, showing that Alice again reported her father missing, and the authorities didn't attempt to take her DNA at that time. Well, it turned out his DNA had been in a repository for since 2004, basically waiting for her DNA. So in 2014, last year, finally a DNA sample was taken from her by Houston authorities, and it led to a match. But it turned out there was at least a four-year missed opportunity to match up their DNA.
Wow. So the key here is matching information on missing persons and unidentified remains.
Those two have to marry up. One can't exist without the other, right? What we learned in our reporting and what's obvious is that every Jane and John Doe is missing from somewhere, right? But in some of these cases, like Alice's, what was really compelling to us was the fact that she couldn't know for sure for 12 years whether her father had become deceased or just walked away from the family. And that was an agony in her story that was really gripping for us. And once she had that answer, it was difficult for her to know that he had died, but it was also helpful for her to finally know what had happened to him. She told us she was relieved that he wasn't suffering somewhere.
So one of the problems you've identified is that there's no federal laws requiring local agencies to place information on the missing and unidentified into federal databases. And so therefore, you know, a lot of cases go cold. People don't get matches. Are there any efforts to change that?
Three times a group of lawmakers have proposed limited reforms that would at least seek to marry up nationally reported missing persons and the unidentified dead. each of the three times the bills didn't pass. They didn't get a lot of attention in Congress. But this month, we've been told that a lawmaker from Connecticut, who's been a sponsor on each of these three past attempts, is going to try to propose this legislation again.
G-Dub, thanks for coming in. I know you'll keep a close eye on all this.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Check back with us next Tuesday for another podcast. A teenage girl goes missing, and her disappearance brings two strangers living 1,000 miles apart together.
We always thought, or I always thought, that Michelle was going to come home.
If you want to take a crack at solving a cold case, explore a new web tool we've created. It's at lostandfound.revealnews.org. If you have a minute, please let us know what you think of the show. Search for us on iTunes and leave us a review. It makes a big difference and helps new listeners find us. Seriously, do it. And remember, we're also on the air. Check with your local public radio station to see what time they're airing us. Our lead sound designer and engineer is my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs. He also wrote the music for today's episode. Our editorial director is Robert Saladay. Our managing director is Krista Scharfenberg. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.
Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal. Odoo, modern management made simple.